There you go. Kawhi Leonard sure showed Nick Nurse, eh? Call me out. How dare you do that to me? You hear the anger in Kawhi Leonard's answer there, and you realize that everything we heard about him in San Antonio had to be right. I mean, the guy's clearly an issue in the clubhouse, isn't he, Doug Smith?
Yeah, he's really bad. So that whole line about I called game instead of bank last night, he's a surly, sullen, uncommunicative, bad teammate.
He really is. He might be the least likable athlete we've seen in Toronto history.
He's not the least likable athlete employed by Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment.
That's very true.
Let alone Rogers.
Stop it. Don't go any further. There's no need to go any further there.
Yeah, I know.
All kidding aside, though, you know what? I mean, look, you've spent your time in a lot of scrums and dealing with coaches, and every coach kind of goes through, they have a moment. It's not going to define their career, but they kind of have a moment where they like to reinforce every now and then that, you know what, they are the coach. And I thought that was kind of a moment like that for Nick.
Yeah, and you know, I think it was probably necessary. It was absolutely premeditated, but again, Jeff, I think all great players want to be coached.
Absolutely,
and if that's what it takes to sort of wake them up a little bit, it's been coming really easy for the Raptors and Kawhi Leonard all year. They really haven't. You know, they had a little blip there where Lowry was out and Kawhi missed some games. They were 8-8, I think, in December, but really, it's been a pretty. They were 21-4, so you get a little bit. Bad habits creep in, and people get a little lethargic, especially at this time of year. Playoffs are wrapped up. Just a matter of whether you finish first or second. And you take your foot off the gas a little bit, and the coach needs to say, hey, let's go. Finish strong, get to the break, and then we'll get ready to go to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's kind of entirely what I took from that, is it was sort of the first – I don't know if you call it a message, but yeah, it's an indication. Let's play well in these two games. We got a break and come back, and you know the stretch drive commences. And I don't think Kawhi went out with a burr in his ass and had the game that he had because I don't know. Kawhi may not have even known what the hell was said, to be honest. But I just thought there was a lot. You know what? There are times when you watch a team and when you follow a team, there are days that are where you kind of sit back at the end of the day and go, yeah, that was a good day. Like yesterday was a good day. The Jeremy Lin stuff, Kawhi's game, Marc Gasol, who, I mean, Doug, does he have anything else in his bag of tricks? Because I think he emptied it. He emptied it last night.
I think he's got a lot more passing ability as soon as he gets like one practice with these guys.
Mm.
They didn't practice on Sunday in here. He would have to shoot around Saturday morning in New York, shoot around walkthrough yesterday morning, and that's it. So once he gets to know where Pascal's going to cut or who he's playing with, where they're going to go, what their strengths are, I think he's got a lot more to give.
You know, it was pretty obvious. Guys like Eric Smith and that, guys who were courtside, and you could pick it up on TV as well, Doug. We're talking about how communicative he is on the court, how loud he is, how he's a decision maker out there, isn't he? And he knows he's being counted on to be a decision maker.
He's a lot mentally tougher and more demanding than you would think just looking at him. And that's what guys who've covered the Spanish team for years and covered Memphis for years have been saying for a long time. He sort of has this manner about him where you think he's sort of going not coasting, but economy of motion. But he's a tough SOB who will demand excellence and lead by example and vocally.
You can see him being the type of guy late in the game, late in the playoff game, with the ball in his hand, making a decision. Can't you? That's the thing I thought of yesterday.
He's been in every big game situation imaginable. He played in on a world championship gold medal team in 06. He played in two Olympic finals. Nothing's going to phase this guy. I know they didn't win a championship or play in the finals in Memphis, but he's been in every big game situation you can think of. And when it comes to the Raptors in the playoffs, nothing's going to faze them at all.
As an aside, boy, Kenny Atkinson and Sean Marks have done a nice job with Brooklyn, haven't they?
Oh, they're fun. I think they need a star. They need a absolute go-to guy, and I'm not sure who that is right now. But, yeah, they run around. They shoot threes really well. They all shoot them. They're very unselfish. They find the hot guy. They get the ball to him. I think they're a fun team to watch, and I think they finished probably sixth, maybe seventh in the East this year.
We're awaiting, of course, a formal announcement on Jeremy Lin and by his contract bought out by the Hawks. Tell me a little bit about. I mean, I remember covering. I was at the game. I was covering the game. I know you were too, where he hit the buzzer beater when he was with the Knicks, and you know, Lin's sanity was. I don't know if it was born at that point, but it was. Yeah, the shirt started moving at that point in time. What is or who is the Jeremy Lin we see now as a player compared to that Jeremy Lin, and what should Raptors fans expect from him?
Well, he's 30 years old now, so he's been around a long time, and he's a good NBA player. I don't think he's not going to be an all-star ever in his life. He's not going to get you 20 a night, but he's a serviceable backup, third backcourt kind of guy. He'll fit really well, I think, playing alongside Lowry like Van Vliet did until Van Vliet gets back. And then he becomes the DeLon Wright, where he gets those minutes at the one and the two. He's really good in pick and roll. And he's creative enough with the ball that he can create shots for other guys. As buyout guys go, he's nearly a perfect pickup because he's veteran. He's selfless. I think he's an interesting guy who'll fit in with the personalities. And, I think it's a really good ad, especially now with Van Vliet going to miss 3 weeks.
And the other name that's out there, of course, is Markieff Morris. What would he bring to the table if that were to come about?
He's tough. I think that's a big if. I know there's people drooling over the prospects, but he's tough. He's a physical presence, a banger, not a gifted athlete, but he's a tough kid who, if he's willing to play for a few minutes a night, because he'll be the third guy in the center rotation, he'll be behind Gasol, Ibaka, Siakam. The times they play Leonard at the four, there's not a lot of minutes for that spot. It's what Greg Monroe was. And I don't know that if you're Morris and you need to basically sort of reclaim your career and show that you're healthy, I think you're going to go somewhere you're going to play. And I don't think he's going to play an awful lot here.
In conversation with Doug Smith on the Jeff Blair Show. Getting back to Marc Gasol for a minute, one of the, I don't know if complaints, but one of the things that we've heard Raptors players say at times this year is that with Kawhi on the court, late in the game on the line, there has been a tendency to stand around a little bit and sort of let Kawhi do it. I think that's kind of changed. Certainly I think it's changed with Kyle Lowry's return to health. But I'm wondering if maybe with a guy like Marc Gasol out there, Doug, that doesn't increase the likelihood of extra movement or prevent that from happening. Maybe I'm reading too much into his impact, but from a tactical point of view, could that be the case?
Yeah, he gets the ball, he moves it quickly, and that sort of permeates the roster. Other guys move it quickly. Nick was saying last night after the game that if Gasol makes the one quick decisive pass, it generally leads to another quick decisive pass, and maybe a third. And I think that's what, in those 96, 94 last 2 minutes of a playoff game situations, that's what you want. And if you've got a guy out there who can handle the ball, has handled the ball, and can start that sequence, you're going to see a little bit more crispness and quickness instead of, like, go to work, Quad.
When Jeremy Lin is here and when somebody else is here, whoever fills that spot and everything's kind of working, everything's in place and we're going down the stretch, what role do you see for Patrick McCaw? Because there were times yesterday where he in particular seemed to really, really profit from being on the court with Marc Gasol.
Yeah, I don't know. Because if you have Lowry, Van Vliet, and Lin, I'm not sure where he fits. I think they want Norm Powell's physical presence a little bit more than they want McCaw's quickness and tenacity. So, you know, I think he's going to have a chance to earn some minutes, but I'm not sure he's physically as big and as tough as they need. But again, last night he was really good. And, you know, Marc Gasol doesn't know him from Adam. They probably just met on Saturday, and he made that great backdoor cut to him for the dunk, the quick little touch pass. And McCaw's, like, he's fast, he's tenacious, he's a tougher defender than you think, but I don't think there's a significant role for him once they get Leonin and Van Vliet healthy.
Doug, I want to shift focus a little bit, too, to the NBA in general. You know, the sort of back and forth between the Lakers and the Pelicans, you know, the allegations that, you know, the Pelicans may not have been dealing in good faith with the Lakers, the allegations the Lakers may have been tampering, Magic Johnson talking about Ben Simmons making an offer, the NBA investigating it, all that stuff. There's been so much talk about player power in the NBA right now, and I know that's not going to change, but could this whole, you know, the way the Anthony Davis situation has played out, could that be a thing, Doug, that forces Adam Silver and the NBA to, and I'm not saying take the agents out to the woodshed or anything, but try to come to some sort of an arrangement, a ceasefire, whatever you want to call it, about talking about other players and other teams?
Yeah, there's got to be a way to do it because it's getting ridiculous now. And it's been going, you know, it's gone on for years, but quietly. Now it's almost taking away from the actual playing of the game. And I think at that point, Silver and the Board of Governors are going to step in and say, look, you can't do this. It's going to cost you a lot of money and maybe a draft pick. And we got to nip this in the bud. And they got to do something. This whole, you know, tampering is such a nebulous thing. You don't know what is and what isn't. And, of course, everybody wants to play with LeBron because he's really good, unless they don't want to play with him because he's too good. But there has to be a balance, and it's swung too far to the public love affairs to change my team next year or the year after with this specific guy.
Do you blame, I'm not going to say blame LeBron for it, but is LeBron kind of the spark here that lit this, or does this go back to Bosch, LeBron, and Wade?
I think it probably goes back to that big three that was kind of LeBron driven.
Right.
And it happened when he went there, took Bosch with him, got a lot of guys, Mike Miller, a lot of other veterans to come and fill out that roster. When he went to Cleveland, he got guys to come and play with him there. It hasn't happened in Los Angeles yet, but it probably will. You know, we got a lot of old guys. So it's been going on for almost a decade. It's just becoming far more prevalent and too public, I think. I think the fans are getting a bit turned off by it.